This is Night Search. Our host, Eddie Middleton, leads us on tonight's journey through the paranormal as we talk with people from all walks of life who speak from experience about UFOs, close encounters, mind manipulation, and other paranormal puzzles. Get ready now to listen, learn, and participate in tonight's Night Search. Now here is our host, Eddie Middleton.
What's out there, indeed?
Night Search, dedicated to finding out.
There are superior intelligences out there that are working day and night, especially at night, to undermine and destroy people's lives in ways they don't even suspect. To expose and bring to light this truth and to help the victims of these types of assaults is not a job to be undertaken by the faint-hearted, because these beings don't like their sinister games being exposed. Tonight on Night Search, you will meet two veteran spiritual warriors who have been combating these malignant forces for a very long time, and not without suffering some battle scars, believe me. My guests tonight are Barbara Bartholik and John Zaffis. Barbara Bartholik has researched the dark underside of alien abductions for over 30 years and is a master of regressive hypnosis. She has been able to probe perhaps deeper than any other researcher the abduction phenomenon and to find out truths that tell a very disturbing story. John Zaffis is the country's leading expert on demonic possession cases. He has participated in numerous exorcisms. Like Barbara, John has often been a lifeline to people who are drowning in the most sinister darkness of all, the hell of demonic possession, of living in demonically possessed homes. This is a rare opportunity to hear these two great researchers converse and compare notes on a subject which most people know extremely little about. So many people, when they hear about this for the first time, don't believe it's really happening. Hopefully tonight, some of you will become believers. I'm Eddie Middleton. My co-host is Steve Lancaster here on Night Search. We're glad to be back on the Memphis airwaves. And I'm going to bring our guests right online here, Barbara Bartholik and John Zaffis. Are you all online there with us?
Barbara? Hi, how you doing?
Hey, doing okay. And you?
I'm doing good.
And Barbara, you online with us?
I'm online.
Hi, Barbara.
Hi, John.
Yeah. Good to hear you again.
Good to be with you on this program.
Yeah, it's been, it's been almost a year since I had you two on last time. Well, we want to start out and let Barbara, I'm going to let her go first, and tell us a little bit about how she got involved in alien abduction research. And then we'll talk about how you got involved in demonic possession cases. Barbara, what really was the first thing that sparked your interest or drew you into this research?
Well, actually, it was a memory that popped into my mind at the age of 37. But let me set the stage here. We're having a very tumultuous thunderstorm, and we are looking at the possibility of tornadoes. Tonight has just become very severe, and I want to apologize if I have to sign off unexpectedly. We're having an electrical storm.
Oh, my God.
Now, you'll hear it in the background.
I guess that's appropriate atmosphere for this kind of show, but...
Well, I just can't believe how it set the stage tonight. I'm sure you can hear the thunder.
No, not yet.
Okay. I'm right by an open sliding glass door, so I can watch for any approaching tornado. Nevertheless, let me tell you that I had this memory when I was 37 years old, and it caused me to try to search out anybody who had ever written about such a memory. And that's how I got started, actually. I was in television production, and I think the cosmic forces arranged it so I met with Dr. Jacques Vallée, and we worked together for approximately 7 years. I didn't know anything about UFOs at that particular time, other than my first investigation was into the Heaven's Gate clan or group, who later committed suicide, of course.
And you're the only one in the country that was ever able to do a documentary film on them.
Yes, I definitely was involved in a six-hour documentary, and I spent approximately a month with these people, and they were extraordinary. They were highly academic and not easily mind-controlled. And many of the members that committed suicide were people that I worked with during the 70s. So they did stick with their leaders. And it was a phenomenon that should be researched more extensively.
Well, you believe they were really in contact with some kind of superior intelligence, right?
At times, there were definite phenomena that appeared around the leaders of the cult. And this phenomenon was so persuasive that millionaires left their family and their jobs, professional people, even a golf professional, believe it or not, left his family, school teachers, head of school systems right here in Tulsa, left their families, and they died with them, with the group leaders in that horrendous suicide, thinking that they were going to go to the level above human during Hellbop manifestation. I believe they thought there was a spaceship behind Hellbop, and they were going to be transported to that spaceship. Of course, it did entail their suicide in order to get there.
Do you believe that they were totally deluded and mind-controlled by the alien beings?
Well, who knows? They might be on the spaceship now in their spirit bodies. We don't have any idea, do we?
I'm not sure, tell you.
That's a question that will go unanswered. But your logic tells you that most probably they might have been following a false god.
Well, you've seen a lot of cases like that where the aliens deluded them and had them thinking something really positive was going to transpire in their lives through their contacts with these beings, and then find out it was just far otherwise.
Yes. Now, I want to say that I've come across some very interesting information, and it attests to the fact that the Gnostic Gospels absolutely describe two alien species, one reptilian and one embryonic, which would be the gray species. At the time of 2,000 years ago, the Gnostics were well versed in what they called the intruders. Now, their specialty 2,000 years ago was mind control. Now, we now are opening up to the fact that they are so pervasive, and mind control definitely is what they excel in. So we have the fact established. They have been here throughout history. Ancient writings from India. Wherever you go, you can find proof that these interdimensional, what we may call aliens, what they may be labeled demons in some classifications, have existed from the beginning of mankind.
And I guess they've convinced a lot of abductees and people they were in contact with that their agenda was something quite positive and favorable for mankind. Like, remember that old Twilight Zone episode that they were here to serve mankind?
Yes.
But maybe as a meal for themselves.
Eddie, I didn't want to jump right into that aspect.
We'll get into it before the show's over.
Well, unfortunately, when you talk about that aspect, you can end up 6 feet under.
Yeah.
This is definitely a subject that is extremely dangerous.
As you know from your own experience, the kind of subjects that you get into that other researchers never really touch.
You know, there are many agendas, Eddie. They have many agendas. And I believe that John Zaffis is absolutely extraordinary in writing this book, Shadows of the Dark. I've been enthralled in the book for the past 3 nights. And I am so glad to see what he has written. And it's important and a must read for everybody. It is amazing how many characteristics and descriptions fit alien events, coincide, absolutely replicate alien events.
And you have some photographs you're going to talk about later that are very similar to photographs that appear in John's book.
In John's book, he presents fabulous spirit photographs where spirit psychic energy manifests on the film. I have also taken photographs of alien abductees during the time I'm working with them. And these spirit manifestations absolutely appear on film with the alien abductees. And I have many pictures to prove that. So I found it fascinating when he displayed his photographs.
Yeah,
and how similar they are.
Yeah, I'm anxious to see those photographs and your photographs as well. Barbara, I think we're going to go ahead and take our first break, and we'll come back and let John introduce himself, and then we'll get you two in dialogue. That's when it gets intense, folks. Stay tuned. We'll be back shortly.
Night Search, dedicated to finding out and hearing about UFO encounters, strange phenomena, even occurrences that may seem like coincidence at the time they occur. Night Search, providing an outlet for your experiences and an inlet for your mind. Night Search with your host, Eddie Middleton.
I'm Eddie Middleton, and I want to introduce my co-host here, Steve Lancaster. He's going to be joining us on Friday nights, drawing upon his very interesting, fascinating background in paranormal stuff. Steve, tell us, our listeners about yourself a bit.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be on the program tonight, Eddie, and I just want to commend you on the return of Night Search to the Memphis Airways. I know you've put a lot of work into this to see this paranormal forum go forward, and hey, it's really exciting to be part of this and to be privileged to be with guests like Barbara and John. And Barbara and John, I've looked at a lot of your materials, met Barbara on one occasion when she came to Memphis, and appreciate you guys giving yourselves with such commitment to serve people in a field that is off the beaten path, and yet people need help, they need instruction, they need information and support in the areas in which their lives have been intruded upon. I was a minister for many years. I'm now a massage therapist, and I've seen a lot involving people's lives and intrusions into their lives in the paranormal realm. And Night Search, we're excited about this program. We hope it will give a lot of information, and we hope to give some resources that will be helpful to people, because I've met people who can't talk a lot about their experiences with others. They're labeled kooks and crazies, and so it's great, Eddie, to be a support to you in this format, where there can be open discussion of things that are commonly swept under the rug.
Hopefully we'll bring some people out of the closets, some local people who've had alien contacts and other kinds of hair-raising paranormal experiences where they really need to talk about it, you know. Well, I'm going to bring John on here and let him tell us a little bit about himself, how he got involved in paranormal research. John?
Yeah, hi. Well, basically I grew up with the paranormal around me, not experiencing anything. So I was about 15, 16 years old, and basically had an apparition appear at the foot of my bed, and it was very transparent, and I got scared to death, ran downstairs, was telling my mom about it, and she said, "What did it do? Did it, you know, any reaction?" I said, "The only thing it did was shake its head back and forth," and she was kind of surprised at my reaction. And she looked at me and she says, "I think that was your grandfather. He used to shake his head back and forth all the time. And you were only 3 years old when he passed away." And she says, "We just never really talked about my father doing that," which I never really remembered. At that point in time, that's when I was like thinking about it. And I said to myself, there has to be something to this. I used to sit and listen to my uncle tell all the ghost stories and things, but never experienced anything, never had anything happen, so therefore I never really believed in it. But there were some very, very intriguing stories. After that, I started investigating, getting involved with local hauntings in the Connecticut area, things that were known to be haunted. I'd go check them out, I'd read up about them, started really being intrigued with a lot of the things that dealt with the paranormal and ghost hauntings.
At what point did you get some help from your famous uncle there?
With that part of it, not too much, because I was about 18 or 19 when I actually got really involved with it and started doing professional, if you will, type investigations. And at that point, I started, you know, really accompanying him on going a lot of investigations, meeting a lot of people, getting involved with things. And at that point is when I basically wanted to know, do people get possessed? Never seen it, never experienced it, heard about it. And that was a big turning point where I started working with a lot of the different clergy, intermingling with a lot of different people, and experiencing firsthand what some of these people went through. And some of the things that you witness people going through and the torment they go through really changes your mind when you see it happening and you experience it.
John, I had forgot, but once I asked you, how many exorcisms have you actually witnessed firsthand, would you estimate?
I would say anywhere, probably at this point, between deliverances and exorcisms, it's got to be a couple of hundred by now.
Mm-hmm.
At least in that range. You know, it's funny. Over the years, I take this as just, you know, natural for me when I get involved with things or I set things up and I'm intermingling with different things and set up the deliverances or set up the exorcisms that, you know, Eddie, over the past few years, I don't even really pay that much mind on how many I actually do anymore or what I get involved with. I can tell you so far this year, I've probably been involved with at least 10 exorcisms and 5 deliverances for this year so far.
Well, I imagine it never gets humdrum when you're doing an exorcism.
Well, it never does, because I, per se, do not like them. I really would rather not have anything to do with them, but as far as being involved with a family or a person and they need the help, and I'm usually there to support the family and support the clergy that's involved.
You know, I read somewhere Scott Peck had been in on an witness an exorcism in one of his books I was reading, and he said he was glad he had that opportunity to see that, but he asked the last time he ever wanted to see one.
Well, because you don't know what to expect. You don't know what's going to happen. And the majority of the time, I will say they're very quiet. They're a type of situation, you know something's happening, something is being brought forth. You know that, but the reactions a lot of times can be more on a calm level. But when you're involved with the outrageous, where people gain an enormous amount of strength, they're talking in a language that you don't understand, it gets extremely violent, and you'll have outward manifestation of things happening, things moving around in the room while the exorcisms are taking place. And when these people talk in these voices, it's one of the most peculiar things to really actually witness. It not only emanates from an individual, but it will come from around the individual. And the only way I can describe that is it's almost like having stereo in the room. And I've witnessed this many of times when this takes place. Or, you know, you'll start to hear animal noises emanating throughout the room. Different types of things will take place, or you'll get severe pounding in the ceilings and the walls. And when these things occur and you're first involved with this, that's really, it alters your perspective on how you view certain things.
I bet. Have you ever felt like you were in the presence of an intelligence that was just awesome?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. When, you know, these people are, this type of circumstances, they can start coming up with things in regards to your past, people that have passed away in your family, or other people in the room, they can start picking up on information about those individuals that there's no way this person, per se, could have this type of information. So there, that leads me to believe that there's something of an intelligence that is associated with this whole thing that has this knowledge, and it brings it forth to actually terrorize the people that are involved with the deliverance or an exorcism.
Is it maybe like in the movie The Exorcist, where they know your weakest, most vulnerable points that they can attack? And
that does happen. It definitely happens. I've been witness to it. I've had it done to me. I've had other people that have been with me on exorcisms where it's happened to them.
Mm-hmm. And you've seen some people have to just dismiss themselves from the whole affair, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. When your clergy gets involved with doing exorcisms, they go in, you know, with the intent of being able to do this and to be able to rid the person of what is with them. But it does take its toll on the exorcists, one way or another, physically or mentally or both. And a lot of times they're not able to stay in it for any length of time because it does take its toll. Usually it's on the physical end where they get very sick or different types of things will affect them.
Now, you've had some physical attacks, have you not?
I have actually been pushed. I get touched. Never been thrown. I hope I never do. With things like that, seeing things, witnessing things of that nature, yeah. the most common thing that occurs with me in these types of homes or during exorcisms is a lot of the poundings, a lot of the rappings, and a lot of times actually feeling like something is touching you.
Mm. I'm reminded of Macbeth and knocking at the gate.
Kind of.
Well, Barbara, you can jump in any time now. I think we can open it up here. Y'all can get in some dialogue. I think we're going to maybe lead to some interesting insights when y'all start comparing notes.
Thank you. I'm fascinated. I'm just sitting here. First question is, what are the maladies that the exorcists suffer? Can you tell me some examples?
I'm sorry, I can't hear her.
What are some of the maladies that the exorcists suffer? She'd like you to give her some examples.
What are some of the conditions?
Some of the conditions that has been very prevalent with a lot of the clergy I've worked with, they get extremely exhausted. They get very worn out. They seem to get sick very, very easily. It affects their eyesight, their hearing, blood pressure rises. It's these abnormal type things that seem to affect them. Those are the most common things that I've seen actually take place with a lot of the clergy. And it's bizarre because then it escalates as a lot of them get involved with it, where they actually get to a point where they get so sick where they're no longer able to actually perform exorcisms, and I've seen them actually back right out of it.
Have you experienced some of the same conditions, Barbara, in working with abduction cases?
Constantly. It's very difficult. I don't know how I can survive, because I do suffer greatly. And I'm so interested to learn that the clergy do also. I had no idea. Do some of them just go ahead and die? I mean, or do they get better when they move away from it?
What I've noticed is that they still will pay the price for being involved. Their health is affected permanently, even though I know a few of them that have backed away. But it has permanently left a mark or has affected their health. And it's not only just necessarily the clergy. I've seen where it has affected researchers, and the majority of the time, with people that are extremely involved with this, it seems to affect personality, and it seems to affect their health. It will target towards certain things that researchers have. If they have high blood pressure, sugar diabetes, heart problems, or anything of that nature, it seems to increase their vulnerability, and it's just a very strange type of way that it seems to affect everybody. And one of the common things that I've come to do over the past several years is I am very, very interested with bringing researchers aboard to work with me so that they can understand what this bizarre world is that I live in. Because a lot of people will always tell me, John, I can't believe half the stuff you say that you've been involved with. And today I have 9 researchers that work with me and alternate off of different things. And when they experience some of these things in these homes, it's very mind-boggling. And they examine it. They try to understand it. They try to document it. And each and every one of them basically came in searching to see if there was life after death. They wanted to know that there was more than just our existence now. And as things unravel and I watch as they learn and study these things, I try to also teach them to build up their inner strength, no matter what their belief systems are. Because I tell them that's very important. That's one of our key tools. And at different points in times, we all can fall victim. And you have to be able to realize when it's starting to happen, and you have to realize what has to be done once these things start to go into play.
John, we may have some listeners that suspect that their house is demonized to some degree. I was looking at your website, and you had some good practical advice, things that they can do themselves. If you could comment on that and possibly even give them some advice, when should they bring in help?
One thing that I am very much voicing my opinion on these days is that no matter... Today we have a scenario where most religions are very much deteriorating. Belief systems are very much deteriorated. And people are having a hard time believing in the existence of, you know, a supreme being or a god, let alone a devil or a demon. And it's a very hard struggle, but I have to look at things from a perspective that I can understand that due to the way we live in our society and the things that are happening. A key thing is when people start to experience something and things are happening within their home and it starts to affect them, start to take notes, start to journalize some of the things that are happening to you. They're probably not nuts. They're probably experiencing something on a paranormal level. And I always, always recommend that to people. And if they can, no matter what their belief system is, I always believe in bringing in the pure positive of whatever it is they believe in back into their lives and reinforce it to be able to help them to combat some of the things they're dealing with.
It's refreshing, John, to see the respect you give to different belief systems and different approaches.
I am so intrigued with every religious aspect out there. I was very fortunate in my life where I was exposed to so many different religions and so many different belief systems that after so many years, I can sit back and I can say, I believe in a positive, I believe in a negative. You got white, you got black.
Exactly.
So it might have different terms, different terminology, but the bottom line, I still understand what that's all about.
Well, you probably encountered some similarities, John, I guess, in the way a Buddhist priest and a Christian minister would deal with a negative entity, even though they're coming from different systems and background. I imagine there's still some similarities in the way they approach things.
There most definitely is. The Buddhist will go in. They're very, very strong in believing in animal spirit, and that it can be a bad animal spirit that can be influencing that family or that home. And part of their belief system is to go in and try and communicate with that spirit that is in that home and get it to leave. Now here, where if you're dealing with a minister or a priest, they believe it could be a negative spirit, and their attempt is the same identical thing, except we have different terminology. Now, who am I to turn and judge and say whether it could be a negative animal spirit or it can be a devil or a demon? To me, it's still all wrapped up into being a negative. And it's something that can be done to be able to help that particular, the Buddhist family, the Presbyterian family, the Roman Catholic family. I'm very wrapped up into a family right at this moment that they're Jewish, and I'm intermingling with two of the rabbis, and our conversations are so opened, and we're trying so hard to do what we can to be able to help the family, because one of the first things I will do is, look, I'm not interested in having a contest in our belief systems. The people need help. That's my bottom line.
Right.
And, that you know, to me, it's intriguing in some of the different things, the approaches on the things that the rabbis are trying. It intrigues me. And I'm very open to trying to understand all the different methods, the different philosophies, the different roots to some of the different things that the rabbis believe in. And it intrigues me very, very much. I take that knowledge, and I might be able to apply that to another family and intermingle it with something that will be able to help, and to me, that's a positive.
Very positive. Yeah, that's interesting. Barbara, I'm kind of interested. I was reading an excerpt from your book where there was a point in time when you really thought the abduction scenario was benevolent, but you had an encounter. Was it a young doctor that reported some horrendous things being done to him and his fiance, and it sort of changed your opinion of the abduction scenario? Could you tell us a little bit about that? I think that's an interesting conversion in your life.
Well, yes, that did happen. I was lecturing in Dallas, and I was requested to work with a computer analyst and a professor, Dr. Carla Turner. She was the wife of Casey Turner, and she had become very worried about her husband. He had a UFO sighting while she was out of town, and he had a scar on his thigh that they couldn't explain that appeared after this sighting. I worked with that family for 5 years, going back and forth, staying there for a week at a time, numerous regressions, and I worked with other members of the family. I will tell you that Dr. Carla Turner, when she found out what was happening to the entire family, how they were being manipulated without their consent, she turned over her life to writing and lecturing about this subject, and her life was untimely terminated at the age of 47. I opened up my research to her, knowing that she was the one to be public, and unfortunately, her zeal killed her. And this has been the fate of many of my colleagues. I began to take notice.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Barbara. We're going to have to take a little break.
Okay.
We're going to get right back to where you are as soon as we get back. You're listening to Night Search on the Mighty 790, so stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What's out there? What's in here? Ever had a UFO encounter? Ever felt like someone was trying to contact you? Then get ready, because this is Night Search.
Welcome back. This is Eddie Middleton here with Steve Lancaster, my co-host here on Night Search, and we are interviewing two of the country's leading investigators into the dark side of alien abductions and demonic possession, Barbara Barthlick and John Zaffis, and they're going to be comparing notes here. Barbara, I want you to pick up where you left off talking about Carla Turner, who was one of your proteges that got swept into the whole alien abduction scenario through what you said was happening with her family, the manipulation going on, and then she totally dedicated her life then to waking people up to this clandestine activity of these beings that are not exactly benignly intended towards humans, and it led to her untimely death. You want to just pick up where you left off there? And
What I'd like to address is I've worked with hundreds and hundreds of people throughout the years, but what started this in 1987-88, there was a massive, what I call an invasion, and there was a staggering number of people that were having abduction encounters, and they were brought to me, I say, by divine hand. I really never advertised. Believe me, all this has come about because this is my calling, and I can't do anything else, and it's a very difficult job. Nevertheless, what happened when I worked with these people, I had many people to draw comparisons from. I didn't have one sporadic abduction event, and then 5 years later I had another one. I had 100 in a very short time. I'd say in 4 months I had 100 people from different families. In my own neighborhood, I had 30 different family members from 30 different families. Now, I had a perspective that I don't think anybody in the country was able to see. And it was very unsettling. One aspect that has stuck with me, and this goes along with John Zaffis, his work, that's why I'm so interested in his perspective. People, after their abduction encounters, many of these people, and many of them were young, many of them were in their late teens, early 20s, became addicted to methamphetamine. This produced people who could drastically change their personality. Family members would say it was like the movie The Body Snatchers. Somebody that I've known so closely has changed so dramatically. It was as if many of these people actually became possessed. Now, the possession would take place during the use of methamphetamine, but a number of their characters also. It was like the aliens were involved in some kind of agenda, and this was back in 1988. Now I see that methamphetamine is our number one drug problem in the United States, that it would bring forth another entity within the person, as if there was a coexistence or a cohabitant existence with a spirit form. Now, I thought in the beginning this was probably an alien spirit presentation residing within a human. And then as I learned more about the history of possession, it just seems to be all the same thing, only possibly a new agenda that entails thousands. Now, there were other agendas, too, don't get me wrong. And the position is extremely important for us to face the fact that we are producing generations now of children that are being born to these parents that were crank addicted. Crank is, of course, a shortened word for methamphetamine.
Barbara, when you did your work with some of your clients, did it help in relieving the drug problem?
No.
It didn't?
That drug problem is so pervasive, and there is like a 95% recidivism rate. It is absolutely it is the most toxic drug we face now. And it's almost impossible to stop it. Now, these are aspects that I'm delving into because this concerns all of our society. It's extremely important.
Well, we'll start at the same time. If someone wanted to get in contact with the aliens, they could take methamphetamine, right? That might be a good way to get a contact there for the ET, right?
Well, it seems as though when a person is in that frequency, that it's very easy for the alien or interdimensional intelligence to slip right in to the person and coexist with the person. And that can manipulate any kind of violence, arguments, absolute devastation to families. It creates havoc.
So you think the agenda is to fragment the personality and make the person more usable to their agenda? And what is the purpose? What's their payoff of seeing such destructive activity in humanity, do you think, Barbara? Do they feed off the drama?
Yes. The Gnostics knew about this, and I have to express the man who has done 20 years of research. His name is John Lash. I was privy to some of his information. Back in the Gnostic times, they knew that these two alien species, the reptilian and the grays, that they fed off the emotions. They literally use us as batteries. So the more that we can become emotional and express high-frequency emotion, pain, violence, sex,
I hear that
what
cuckoo,
we produce,
Barbara,
for them.
Is that our cue to go to a break, or is that coming from one of your houses there?
That's coming from my house, guys. I got all kinds of clocks.
That's great. Okay. Well, I guess they'll think we're cuckoo on this program.
I tell you, this subject's enough to make you cuckoo.
John, when you've worked with the demonology, have you ever come across anything that was similar or akin to the alien scenario, or was it just totally
different? Absolutely. The parallels with your alien abduction and the grays, the manifestations, and some of the different things that these people exhibit from the alien perspective and my demonology end of it, the parallels are just uncanny. I have a young man here in Connecticut. His name is John, and he runs the Smoking Gun Agency, and he's a fabulous young man with UFOlogy. And him and I have just sat down and compared a tremendous amount of notes, and, you know, it's mind-boggling on how everything is just so similar onto the different types of things. Now, I was listening to Barbara in regards to with the possession, and what I refer to it is as transient possession when this, you know, these entities or spirits or your demonic can enter and leave these individuals. Now, the one difference that I've come up against with people that have claimed to me that they had grays possessing them, taking them over, for some reason or another, and I don't have the answer to this, I'm hoping it'll be answered before I'm out of this world, that when religious provocation is brought forth in these types of different situations, it affects them. And I can't quite understand what the combination is that will affect these people that claim they're, you know, they have the grays within them possessing them, and in a person that claims or has something demonic possessing them, and it's the same type of thing where the religious provocation for some reason or another triggers both. Because I've been in situations where this has happened with both groups of people.
John, do you see in any of your cases that a possessed individual has a greater propensity for drug use? Is there any similarity with what Barbara has seen?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Alcoholism, drug use. One thing that here again is very parallel between what I've encountered and studied and people in UFOlogy is that these people are tormented. Here again, the bottom line is, and they're trying very hard to escape. And a lot of times they will result to alcohol or drugs. And basically what that does do is put a person in an altered state and they experience twice as much.
Well, we're going to have to go ahead now and take our break. I'm sure the people have been listening are going to be staying around when we come back after the top of the hour. Here you're listening to Night Search. Stay tuned. We'll be back shortly.
Night Search, dedicated to finding out and hearing about UFO encounters, strange phenomena, even occurrences that may seem like coincidence at the time they occur. Night Search, providing an outlet for your experiences.
Welcome back to Night Search, the radio show that dares to open its eyes to what's out there at night. And we have two of the country's leading Night Search researchers, Barbara Barflick on alien abductions and John Zaffis on demonic possession cases. And they are going to be comparing notes as we go along here. And, of course, we all have some questions. And after I go to our next break, we come back, we're going to open up the lines for people to call in with questions. Before we get started back here with the dialogue, I want to John to tell our listeners about his new book, Shadows of the Dark, and his website. People can go and read more about his research and his organization he has up in New England. John, go ahead and tell us.
Well, my book, Shadows of the Dark, details.